All right, we are live. What is up, everyone? Welcome to the Clemens with a Z podcast. Got another episode for you. And we were in a cult episodes. We're trying to find out what this wild church that I was a part of was, asking former members their experiences, their stories, their lives, and hopefully trying to find some kind of consensus on this crazy thing that we were in. And today I've got Austin Knoll, who is a former member of the ICOC. He is also the author of a book of his story. It's called A Jumble of Crumpled Papers, and he's also the host of the podcast, Crumpled Papers Podcast. Welcome, Austin.
Roy, how's it going, man? Good to talk to you. I'm glad I've listened to, I think, all the episodes that you've had so far of the series, and I've loved it, and I'm glad to be on.
It still freaks me out when people say that. Does it freak you out when
Oh,
people say I've been listening to your episodes too?
it's the weirdest dynamic I was never ready for. And the book came out first, and that was a similar dynamic with that. Oh, I read your book, and the podcast is similar where people that I come into contact with know much more about me than I know about them. And it's really
Yeah.
interesting dynamic. But yeah, all the time.
Yeah, I'm doing it backwards. I started the podcast
Yeah.
and then I'm writing the book. So it's
Oh, are
like
you?
it's yeah, I've been doing it for I don't know, 2.5 years right now. So
Wow. And it's about all of this stuff or just about your life or what?
hold on 1 second.
No worries.
Short answer, yes. It's about it
Short answer,
all.
yes. Good. Cool.
It
Very
just
cool.
is this, it's just kind of, yeah, my life in and out of this church and where I landed and how I landed and sort of I don't know, I'm in a pretty stable state, so I want to talk about that. And I know that a
Yeah.
lot of people, one, because I moved from when I moved from Georgia up to Virginia, I basically was surrounded by no one who knew about what we were in. And
Right.
so it's just been funny telling the story to all these people. And it's just a wild story. So I want to share it. And I think that I've found healing and want to help people through that. So,
Yeah,
I'm
it's
doing
those moments that really, when you tell somebody who doesn't know about our experiences in that kind of world and their express and their reaction to it, that's the times that I'm reminded, oh yeah, this is kind of crazy because it can become so normal.
Yeah, I think I feel that part that yeah, it was crazy, but I also feel like our church was huge, but in the grand scheme of things, it was still tiny because not many people know about it,
Right.
and
Yeah.
so it's kind of was like it was a big reality check, but then it's just I don't know, it's just a wild story to tell. So anyway, so here we go.
Here we go.
So, first thing first, how did you get involved with the church?
I had no choice. I was born and raised into it. A fun thing I always like to say to people about this, I love to say that my family was known in at least the LA part of the organization because my dad was the first official, whatever that means, baptism of the LA ICOC by Kip and someone else who came over somewhere else. So he was the first guy. So in our church, he's always known as the guy who's like, oh, he's the first guy in our LA area. So
Did they give him a plaque? I'm sorry.
they should have. He deserved one after all that time. But so anyways, my parents both met in the church. I was born into it. I was in it for 19 years. Yeah.
Wow. And so your dad was baptized by Kip.
Yep.
That's wild.
Isn't it wild? It was him and his little, however big the group was, I mean, it got bigger and bigger and bigger, obviously, but for that amount of time, it was just a little group of people just traveling around UCLA area and Hollywood area. That was their terrain there for a while.
Man, and it was because it was after Boston, then he went to LA.
I think
I
so.
think that
Yeah.
was, yeah. I had a paper somewhere in my office that had the timeline of all the churches.
Oh, that's interesting because I don't know as much about that stuff. So that's interesting to me. I like that.
Oh yeah, I dove deep. There's resources out there and you can find all sorts of stuff. So yeah, so you're a kingdom kid, so this is basically all you knew. So you're just like me. All I
Yep.
knew was this church. So when I say God, like the word God, what does it like, what feelings come up to you, or what image comes up in your
Ooh,
head from like
dude,
back
that's a
then?
good question to start off with. Oh my gosh. Okay. So, do you want more now or more back then in that context? What? Because it's very different to me now.
I think it would be cool to share like back then, and then we can
Okay.
get to where it is now, because that'll be at the end. Yeah, we'll bring that back
Sure.
up.
So back then, the dynamic of God was very tricky because I feel like what was preached and what all the songs were about and what all the words were written to say was such a different perception of God than how he was experienced practically, right? At all the other times. So we hear about, oh, God's grace and his love and his mercy and blah, 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 and his power. And then he was so, a word I'm using recently to describe this is he felt so domesticated for us, meaning he was, it always felt like, okay, there was a bigger version of God out there, but yet all of that becomes irrelevant when he's actually interacting with us because it's confined to these things, these rules, these. In my book, I have a sentence, I think, talking about how there was so much fear growing up about the right and wrong thing and staying in the margins that my idea of God, without really always intentionally thinking about it, but when I did, it was okay, he's up there. He loves me, apparently, and he's my friend, and I can go to him for anything, but he has these two buttons in front of him, a red button and a green button. And every time I cross that line, do something bad, he presses that red button. And there was that scripture used a couple times with us about becoming an enemy of God. And it was used so nonchalantly as, oh, you do a wrong thing, and all of a sudden you go from being God's best friend to God's enemy. And that was in my mind for so long of every time I do something, oh, I flip sides and now I'm on the enemy's side and I'm working against him until I repent or do something. Then God presses the green button and gets me back in. And that dictated, you know, everything. That's an entire dynamic shift of how you live in that way.
And you felt that early on, so like as a kid.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. And mostly, if not all, from the way I interacted with leaders and just the structure of the church, right? That was, it was inferred of, okay, so that must be who God is, despite all the big words used describe him as merciful and loving and all that less stuff. And it wasn't always, it never got to a point either where I saw practically the way he was being perceived as harsh and condemning and all that stuff, and going, oh, you know, maybe he's not loving. But for some reason, it was, despite the way it was preached and the way it was lived being so different, for some reason, there was some middle ground where we rationalize it, where, oh no, that is him being loving. Oh, that is him being merciful. That is him being a good friend. And it wasn't. So it really lowered my standards, I think, of what I felt love was too, practically, and ever from anybody else. If it's, oh, God loves me this way, and that's how his love is portrayed, then that's what love is, which really undervalued love and grace.
Yeah, it to me it always felt like I was either moving closer or further away. Like I was never just
Always.
like I was never like in, you know. You were never okay. You were either getting closer to maybe closer to the entrance of heaven or closer to the entrance of hell.
Right.
And it's interesting that you equate that to actual love, because I think that kind of feeling has plagued me in relationships, you know, that I've
Sure.
had to like, you know, let go of and heal at that part, because it's all about work. It's all about like, it's like, yes, you can lose this and it'll all be your fault, and you deserve to have it
Oh
lost,
yeah.
you know, and that
And
feeling in
because,
it.
oh, go ahead,
Go
finish
ahead.
that thought. Go ahead. I was gonna
It's
say,
just that
because,
feeling.
oh,
Sorry.
sorry. No,
It's
you go. You
okay.
go. You first. Finish your thought. I interrupted you,
But
so go
like
ahead.
we it's but we deserve, like if I lose it, I deserve to lose it. But that's what love is, and that's how God shows his love for us, by allowing us back, I guess, you know, which is, oh, so messed up. So yeah, go ahead. What
It
were
was
you
that
gonna say?
dynamic of, oh, God's ways, he's so much bigger, more powerful, his ways so much higher than ours, that we almost, and that's the thing too, is we don't deserve it. But the thing is, it was this way of, we don't deserve it even when we think we're in, it's like he has the right at any moment to retract that from us, and he will if we do the wrong things.
You have
And
to know that you don't deserve it. It's like it's the
right.
foundation of everything.
And in a system where, like you said, like skirting that line, where you're always in either going forward or going back, closer or further, the entire way you live or navigate your faith is of that threat of what might happen, right? And so if the dynamic is always in contention with what you could lose, then you're always living in an earning mindset. You're always trying to earn everything. And everything you do is trying to earn this and earn that and earn that, and thus not lose these things, which is just a terrible way to live.
Dude, I'm really glad that you said that earning mindset. That's
yeah,
a great
everything.
Way to just to phrase it all, you know? And it keeps us so small in comparison with us, you know, and it just keeps us like working towards something. And so it's like all of our focus gets so small because it doesn't matter and nothing else matters as long as we're towing whatever line they say we're supposed to tow or God, as long as we're getting in favor with God, you know?
Everything is on that line.
So, yeah. So, wow. What a way to view God as a kid.
I know, right? It was fantastic. It was great.
Oh yeah, it was awesome. So what was it like for you in the beginning? Like, what were some things that you can remember that were like positives as a kid?
Honestly, so many positives as a kid. And the thing is too, right? The two sides of that coin is later on realizing a lot of those positives had negative aspects. But as a kid, man, I mean, I was, and this is true for a lot of Kingdom kids, but not all that I've talked to, is many like me. I was completely bought in to everything. I loved it. It was my world. And my entire social circle, obviously my belief system and the way I live my life, my virtues, my values, my aspirations, everything was centered around church. And sometimes at the compromise of like at school, I didn't put nearly as much effort into the friendships there, or at least I did, but they were viewed as, oh, I can lose those. I probably will. They're not going to be as valuable. They're not going to last. So the ones that I sow into in church are going to be the much more lasting things. But the positive aspect of that is back then it was, oh, these are my lifetime friends. And that's still true in a big way. A lot of them are now gone. Most, actually, if not all of them are gone now from my COC, but those friendships have lasted. So that was a huge thing. I loved the camps. I really did. I had a great time at the camps.
You guys
in
had a
horse
camp
stables
out there
than
on the
ever.
West Coast?
Oh yeah, we had a camp out in the mountains in Big Bear.
That's
Yeah.
cool. What was it called?
It was called, the name of the camp, I don't know, it was in Idlewild Pines. That's the name of the camp. I don't know. It was just called youth camp, preteen camp. We had preteen camp for middle school, teen camp for high school. Yeah, but I love that.
Yeah, we had the swamp over here in Georgia. That's where everybody went to. Okay. Continue. Yeah. So,
and I mean, and that's everyone I talk to is the social. I mean, the positive aspects almost always revolve around the relationships. Because I think our church, to a fault, we pushed relationships so hard, and the depth that was achieved in those relationships oftentimes far exceeded those outside the church. Once again, also at a fault sometimes, but it really mattered and it was valuable to me as a kid, you know?
Yeah, you talk about the depth of friendship. You know, I liked it. I was just thinking about and talking with a friend of mine back from our past, and, you know, we were around each other so much, you know, because you were always at a church service or always at a function or you were at a retreat or things. And so you were like, you got to really be surrounded by your friends. And with that comes deep relationships. You know, it's like,
oh, yeah.
Instead of something taking 15 years to build, I mean, you spent those 15 years in 2 years, you know?
Right.
And we were, we were, it was so easy for us to talk because, I mean, we kind of had to talk, right? With the discipling and the discipleship partners and stuff, but it just became the norm to have deep, meaningful conversations with your friends. And it's not like that on the outside, you know?
No. And we weren't meeting just on, like you mentioned, like the schedule. It wasn't like, oh, we meet on Sundays and see each other at church and maybe at a Friday night thing. No, we were living life together. We were Wednesday nights, Tuesday nights, Friday nights, Saturday sometimes, there's some Saturday event going on somewhere, church. After church, we go to lunch, we hang out. And I was homeschooled from 10th grade the last 3 years of high school. So for those years, and I was homeschooled with church kids. Our head teacher was the main pastor's wife. So every day at school was my closest church friends. And it was every single day all encompassing, which was a huge positive for me when things were going well. But when certain things got worse, it became a nightmare because you couldn't escape it at the same time. But a huge positive for a long time.
So you were homeschooled with people like other kids from the church? Was it like just like we don't want you in public school, or they were just trying something?
No, honestly, I was public school or private school for middle school and high school. Sorry, up to 9th grade. So my first year of high school was normal school, I guess. And then homeschooling was more of realizing there's some things I wanted to do. I'm a filmmaker, I'm a screenwriter, stuff I wanted to do that I was actually being inhibited from. So it was like a overall, if there's a good and bad reason to do it, or healthy or unhealthy reason, I feel like I like the decision to do that. But it was a mixture of people there. They weren't always there for the same reasons. A lot of them, I don't know, it's a variation of things, but all church kids, people I grew up with.
That's cool. And so your parents were like, you wanted to do other things like artistically, creatively. And so they let you get homeschooled, do that. That's pretty rad.
Yeah, my mom taught the speech and debate class. Remember that? Because they had different moms doing different things, and one of her moms did a chemistry. Oh, she was a chemist, and so she did chemistry, and then the pastor's wife did history and economy classes and all that kind of stuff. So,
Wow, that's cool. And so you were bought in, so you go through the studies. Was it pretty easy to go through the studies?
yeah, studies are. I mean, I've heard you talk about studies before on this. It's an experience where, character studies are a whole thing, which I always bring up in my podcast, which are ridiculous. Just trying to iron out different aspects of your character that they think are, it's usually pride or arrogance, really,
Pride and
before
arrogance.
you can be ready to study, which is ridiculous. For whatever reason, I didn't have to do any character studies because I was just so spiritual,
Huh.
I guess.
True to
So all
you,
my
man.
friends were really miffed at me because I know, because they're like, "Hey, wait a minute, you're going to do character studies?" I'm like, I guess not, dude. Which says also makes a statement, honestly, not by me, I didn't choose it, but by the leader saying, "Oh, that kid is apparently better off than you are," which is just so not true. And which is just ridiculous. And then, okay, a couple of things from my studies I always think about when I think about my studies is the insane dynamic. And I don't know, growing up, so in our ministry, this was a question I realized was asked to many people studying the Bible at a certain point. There was a question that was asked. And tell me if this was the same for you, or maybe it's not. But at a certain point in our studies, I remember we were at McDonald's doing a study at McDonald's. And the study's almost over. The study's finished. And it's an earlier on study. So we're not near the end of the finish line of getting baptized. We're earlier on. And my leader who's studying with me asks me, "So, Austin, if you tell me, if you died tonight, where would you go to heaven or hell?" And obviously, there's only one right answer there. You go, oh, I'd go to hell, apparently, because if you said heaven, you'd be in 20 more studies. So I said, "Oh, hell, obviously." And it was great. Awesome. See you next week. Do your homework. We'll continue on the studies and we'll get baptized in 3 months. Awesome. Thank you so much for that. I appreciate it. And it's such a like, where am I left with in that gap before you wave this bacon over me saying, "Hey, this is going to give you a heaven, but you can't have it yet. So if you die tonight, you're going to hell. Have fun sleeping." And like, it's just wild.
Oh my gosh, I'm laughing so I don't cry because of how
I
intense
know.
that is, you know. But it's like, yeah, of course they asked me that. And it was
Yeah.
definitely a throwaway question. It was definitely not something that, you know, they're going to probe you anymore. They just need to make sure you understand that you go to
Right.
hell because, you know, you've got to fear something in order
Right.
to work so hard at it.
It has to be urgent.
I think that I always got a sense that being a kingdom kid, the studies were going to be harder than with other kids. I don't know if you felt that. Sounds like you didn't. You said it was pretty easy.
Well, let me clarify. Or let me ask you to clarify. So you say easier for kingdom kids? Why? What in your mind?
No, harder for kingdom
Oh,
kids.
harder for kingdom kids. Yeah, why? Why harder for kingdom kids?
Because we don't know anything other than this.
Oh, interesting. So
And
harder to
so there's
differentiate
this,
almost.
yeah. And so it's like, if we're in this church from the beginning, what have we really done? Like, quote unquote, sinned? You know,
Right.
do you really believe this? Or are you just, this is just what you know, and you know how to answer the questions
That's
type
interesting.
of
Yeah,
thing.
I totally agree. At the same time, I was surprised because I thought you would have said Kino kids would have it would have been easier because they would know all the answers already.
No,
So it's interesting.
I knew the
Right.
answers, but I think that,
The
I don't know,
conviction.
maybe it was me, but it just felt like, I don't know, I knew, it's almost like they knew that I knew what to say. So they're going to be a little bit tougher on me. Maybe that's what I felt. I don't know. You're the first kingdom kid. I mean, that's, I don't know. I just, not first kingdom kid, but like, I've been trying to get this sense of what the studies were like for us, and I always felt that they were harder on us because of not having any other barometer of things. You know, we didn't have without church or with church. You know, we were always a part of the church.
Almost like because we haven't experienced, quote unquote, the outside world, they have to really make us see or feel the weight of it, kind of, I
Yeah.
guess, which I felt after the studies for sure. There was a Kingdom Kids standard, which was much higher because I believe many of the leaders believed that we had more promise or more potential to stay here longer and not leave.
Yeah. Did you cry at the cross study? I'm
No,
gonna
so
ask you.
I've heard you talk about it all the time. I
Yeah.
didn't cry. Okay, here's the thing too. I felt, and once again, being the all bought in person I was, I wanted the entire experience for these things. So going off, you said the crying on the cross, what my mind went to was the efforts to make the person going through the studies really feel the weight of their sin and the need, sometimes the shame, right? The fear, the need to do this to make things right. And what they often did, which I think was universal in every ICOC church, was they would read us the medical account of the crucifixion.
The
Which
medical
also,
account.
here's the thing too. Here's how, obviously it's not in the Bible. Like it doesn't go through and say,
Yeah.
this happened to you, this. And I didn't, it might have been like probably 4 years ago where I thought about it all of a sudden. I was like, wait, that medical account. Oh, wait, that wasn't in the Bible. Where'd that come from? Someone just thought it up. It's like, oh, this would probably would have happened because the crucifixion includes these things. But so I was so mad because going through my studies, I didn't get read that. And all my friends did.
Oh.
And I took it as, hey, wait a minute. I want all the possible resources here. Why didn't I get this experience? Looking back at Congo, I'm glad I didn't, but I was like, why'd you guys all get read all the brutal things done to Jesus' body? And I didn't.
Yeah, that medical account, I mean, it was all speculation, and I mean it was done in a way like they were explained in a sense of like, well, if he's hanging from a cross and this is happening to his body, and then I
Right.
remember they were very specific on like some pictures would show the nails in the hands, and they made sure that we knew
God.
that like he didn't get it in his hands, it was in his wrist.
In his
And I remember
wrists.
they explained it because if it was in his hands would just slide down, but they would
I
put it
heard that before.
right between the bones and our wrist, making sure that we knew that, you know.
This important, it's important distinction for us to know at 13, 14.
When make sure we know that, okay? So then
Not
we
in the
can
hands, because
totally
that could slip out. You know, the tendons would just rip. It's in the wrists.
Yep. If we see some kid in our school saying it was in the hands, we know we can tell him.
Exactly. Well, actually.
Yeah. But when I was worked with the teens before I was leaving, before I left the church, they would just show the kids Passion of the Christ as like research before the cross study.
They did that for us too. I had my passion night. I did a passion, oh, that sounds weird, a Passion of the Cross night with someone I was studying. A passion night. Yeah, let's not do that. That sounds more like a bachelor. But I remember doing that for my studies, studying with somebody and showing them, being so proud at my house through it in my back home theater, showing the passion. And I like that movie. I'm a filmmaker. I think it's a good movie. But it doesn't correlate to this. It's only for emotion. That's what it is. And maybe a visual representation, sure, because it does that. But the entire point of it is to really make you feel it. And what better way than through a movie with actors and sound and scripted lines? And, you know, that's what the point of a movie is. It's to make you feel emotion. And it works. I didn't cry still. And I felt that's the one time during the studies that I did feel bad for. I feel like, oh, it didn't hit me as much. Maybe I just don't get it. Maybe I'm not ready for this. But I'd already seen it. So maybe that's one of the reasons.
Yeah, like this is my third time talking about it, third time seeing it, man. Sorry, I'm
Right.
all cried out.
Like, I know what happens already, man. I'm prepared.
I've never seen the movie.
Oh, you haven't?
No,
Wow.
I didn't. I never felt that it was. I don't know. First off, because Mel Gibson was a part of
Yeah.
it, I couldn't take it seriously. I never could.
Yeah.
And I just was like, I don't know. I don't know what this is gonna do for me.
Yeah.
It never felt like something I want to watch. And I've never had a desire to. And I think now, since it's been so long, I don't know if I'm ever gonna watch it. You know,
Yes, the
I like,
time's kind of passed, you know?
yeah, I have this funny I remember when it came out in theaters. There was another movie that came out. It was called Club Dread. And it's a Broken
Okay.
Lizards, the guys that did Super Troopers.
Okay.
Don't know if you've ever seen that movie, but yeah, they made another
No, but
movie
I've
called
heard of
Club
it.
Dread. And it came out that same weekend. And me and my friend from church, we went to go see that movie. And it was hilarious because the theater was packed. Like, it was like, of the 16 screens, 14 of them were the Passion of the Christ. There were people getting saved in the lobby. I mean, there was a line out the door. And me and my friend were like, I remember being like, oh my gosh, I hope we can get tickets to this movie. And then we realized, oh, it's just for the passion. And it was like literally like everyone's like, Passion of the Christ, Passion of the Christ, Passion of the Christ, Passion of the Christ. And like me and him, like, two for Club Dread, please.
And everyone stopped and went, "What? What are you seeing?" Oh man, there were probably deliverances and demon exorcisms in the lobby. People getting cast out, like fainting,
Oh
falling
my God.
over. But I remember feeling like, I mean, it became one of those, and it's happened many times since, where a movie comes out that the entire Christian community backs, and it becomes an event movie for them, right? That happened with The Son of God, which came out, you know, years ago at this point, but that became the next movie that became like almost took the place of Passion for a little while because it was the same thing. But the difference was, oh, Passion's better because it's not in English and there's subtitles. So it's more intellectual and you feel a little bit more like, oh, this is a little more real because it's subtitles. And it just felt, for whatever reason,
We love
more
subtitles. It
accurate.
makes us feel so much smarter.
Right? We're watching like real historical documents here.
And now everybody's back on the series The Chosen,
Yep.
right?
Yeah.
That one. Oh my gosh. But yeah, so you want okay, so you go through the studies, you get baptized. What was that like? What was your baptism like?
It's good. I've always wanted to see a recording of my baptism. I had their cameras in my face, and I haven't been able to track down one. I really want to hear what everyone said, and I'm sure there'll be stuff I love people said, I'm sure. But I've always wanted to see a recording of it because I haven't. I don't remember much about it. I remember my middle school dean of students being there because I invited him because he kind of took me under his wing and he was a writer too and we whatever. So he showed up, which is cool. And I remember feeling like I remember that night feeling like, okay, I'm in the big leagues now. I can't, no more sinning. It's clean slate. I'm
Yeah.
done. Can't do anything else. This is it. And a week later going, oh, I said this, I did this. Oh, well, now I'm in debt now from that. I made it to from negatives into zero. And now I'm in positive numbers here. But now that I'm sinning, I got to go back to zero. I got to go back and go back and back to that baptism night because I was at zero then and now I'm not anymore. And now it's kind of tarnished.
Yeah.
I remember that. So the weight of that.
Yeah, I remember the first time. I mean, I can. Jeez. It was such a hard thing to feel. First time you quote unquote sinned after you got baptized, right?
Yeah.
You're just like, geez, I've done it again.
Now what?
Yeah.
Because I've done the thing that I'm supposed to do, and that's the most powerful thing I can do. And you're not taught that that means, oh, you're good. It means, oh, now you're on a track. You better not mess up.
Yeah, it's like he's a, what is it? It's like a shady loan officer, you know,
Yeah.
trying to, he's going to be just, he's writing down, oh, you did it now. Now this is what you owe me. Oh, you owe me this much. It's gone up. It's gone up. It's gone
All
up.
the records, all the tally marks.
Yeah. So you go from feeling like, oh, this is great to, oh my God, you know, what do I do now? Yeah. That's
And
intense.
now what? And it's
And
just,
so,
and that's that was ongoing. It never stopped because that was it now, right? Until I learned better.
And so was it, were you baptized? Was it middle school or high school?
I was 15. It was ninth grade.
Okay.
Ninth grade. Yeah.
Okay. Cool. And so what was life like after that?
Life was good for a while because I had made the right decision.
Yeah.
And immediately it was, I was one of the first ones in my class to
Okay.
do that. And I remember it was immediately like the next week of, okay, you're in now. So now bring your friends. That's your next mission, right? One mission. The first mission was, well, the first boss, right? The first boss fight was getting baptized. Beat that boss. Okay, next boss fight, get your friends in. And immediately in studies, I was never in as many studies as I felt like was good enough because I was in very few. It was my best friend's study. And then I was in a couple other people's studies. And I always felt like, man, people are in studies every week and I'm really not. But it never hung on me that heavy. But I remember being touted as, we had this Friday night depot for the youth ministry or for the teen ministry, right? And they brought up me, this other girl, and one other guy who were the three people in our group of like 30 who had gotten baptized so far. And we were sat in chairs in front of everyone, like kind of like a panel.
Yeah.
And they asked us questions about something, whatever it was. But the main thing was, oh, no, these guys got baptized. They're the role models here. Don't you want to be like them? They're kind of cool. Wink, wink, wink.
What'd that feel like?
It felt great. Are you kidding me? Because I thought it was the right
Oh,
thing.
nice.
You know what I mean? Like, I didn't, it was so bad, but I didn't distinguish, oh, no, I did the right thing. I fully believe in this. And I want the same for my friends. So, of course, I'll be on that panel with you guys. Of course. You know?
Got it.
Yeah.
Wow. And then I would probably, it would have been one of the guys in the audience, like, God, that guy.
Oh, yeah.
You know, no offense. I'm just like,
no, I'd
that
be
was,
that guy now. I
yeah.
blew myself.
So you know, is so life's good through high school, all that stuff. When did things get weird, or when did you, I don't know, things feel shaky?
Well, can I go back to a thing that happened when I was 12, a big part of
Yeah.
my story? Not, I got baptized at 15, so 12. Sixth grade was the first time, because a big element to this, which you've touched on this podcast before, is the insane structure and dynamics between guy and girl relationships in general.
Yeah.
And our ministry was no exception, right? It was, since the very earliest ages, you tell everyone to sit down in a classroom and it'd be guys all on this side, girls on that side, right? Maybe minus one person who dared to go the other side and intermingle, right? No, it's because we were so dissuaded, and everything that was taught to us, every lesson, it was always those inferred undertones of, oh, be careful, because they're, out of all threats to your faith, that can be the biggest, because that is the hardest drop off if you fail. So we're like, okay, bet we won't bother. But that desire was still there. So when I was 12, a group of us were at the head pastor's house because there was a leaders meeting, and all of our parents, it was like small group leaders, they were all there. My parents were small group leaders. So while they were doing their spiritual stuff, we ended up starting to get a game of of truth or dare. And we're all
Nice.
like, pastor's kids and leaders' kids and whatever. And this is the first time, I mean, obviously, we're church kids. We're not, first off, our hearts aren't even there. Like we desire, we've been taught to desire to do the godly things. So this is the first time we've ever done anything like this. And we're like, oh my gosh, this is fun because it's just like, oh, uncharted territory in a truth or dare game. And pretty quickly, I was dared to kiss this girl on the cheek, the girl who I liked. Like
Uh-oh.
blasphemous, crazy, right? Kissing the cheek,
Yeah.
dude. And we didn't want to do it, but we wanted to, right? We didn't want to because we knew it wasn't. I'm like, I don't want to do that. But yet we're like, oh, but we like each other. There's feelings there. So we caved and I did very quickly peck on the cheek. And it was over. And the game stopped because everyone was like, oh, that's what we wanted out of this. We achieved it. We're done. Can't do it anymore. Hands off. And it dispersed and the day went on. And then a couple, I don't know, pretty soon after, there was a Devo on Friday night that I didn't go to because I was sick or something. And I remember so vividly, all of a sudden, my phone on my desk just blowing up with phone calls and text messages that were like chaotic and condemning. And what did you do? All caps. What happened with this girl? What happened? Blah, 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 from leaders and from friends. And I immediately knew, oh, something happened and they found out what happened. And they had figured out what happened because some lie was told to this girl about me and she got mad and then everyone's like, oh, something happened. What happened? And everyone, all the leaders and all the kids that were there that night found out something had happened. And the long story of this is my parents, I immediately told my parents because I felt so bad about it. And my parents are close and we resolved it between ourselves and that should have been it. We had talked with leaders to resolve that, I guess, because in that situation, that's what the next step is. But those conversations did not stop. There were more conversations with me and leaders, more with her and leaders separately, one more together. Youth camp was a couple weeks later in the summer, and we had another talk at night once the last worship session was done. They brought us into the assembly hall and sat us down in these white plastic fold-out chairs and delved into it again. And it became more and more clear that they were just trying to make us feel worse and worse to make sure it never happened again, right? And as an example for others. And every conversation, I remember feeling more and more, or I felt lower and lower and lower of a person and felt a greater and greater gravity of what I had done and just felt like I was the worst person ever. And then it all eclipsed, it climaxed in the end, the last day of youth camp, after all these talks have been had over and over again, going to the same stuff, they had our entire ministry meet out at the bleachers of the soccer field on the at the camp. All the leaders, all the kids for middle school, and they had us stand up, me and this girl, and I forget exactly what happened because I blocked it out or something, but they basically made us apologize. They told everyone in our ministry. And this is a good distinction here, an important one to make. They told everyone that something had happened between us. They didn't tell them what happened. So, in everyone's mind, oh, him and this girl did something bad because this is a pretty extreme measure to take. But they didn't find out what it was. Some never did. My best friend didn't know until 2 years ago or 3 years ago that, oh, it was just a kiss on the cheek. He never knew. And we had to apologize in front of everybody. And that's when it stopped for me. For this girl, she'd apologize again with her parents in front of more of the ministry. But for me being the guy, I think that's when it was enough for me. But she kept going in. So that was the
Yeah,
first big thing for me.
jeez.
Yeah, wild.
So much to unpack there. The
Right?
first
I
thought
have
is
been.
the first thought was I was laughing that like truth or dare for us was like a kiss on the cheek versus what truth or dare would be anywhere else.
I know. I know.
Then the fact that like it was so, immediately was a thing, and that your phone is ringing. And all of that, and like, oh, just how these things were handled. It's like they were so scared. What does this mean if we don't do this? Because they're probably thinking if we don't do something about this, then everyone's going to be kissing on the cheek, and then
We're
Right, we
just
have
gonna to end
be,
it here
yeah,
right
no
now.
one can kiss on a cheek because the cheek is close to the lips. And if we get to the lips, then all bets are off because then no one's gonna be able to control themselves and it's gonna be
Then it's game
Sodom and
over.
Gomorrah. Damn, dude, that sucks.
Yeah, it was
The
terrible. We
first
felt
thing
the
I could I
worst.
just
Yeah.
and so but it's very much like that's our MO in our church was like you were gonna be made to feel as bad as humanly possible about something so that
Right.
to just keep you in line and control. And then so you were saying she had to apologize again to her parents after you had made the public, you guys had made the public apology.
Yeah, her, I didn't know this until I wrote the book, and she said, by the way, this happened too, was she had to apologize, her and her parents had to go in front of the ministry at a youth night and apologize to them.
Her parents too?
Yeah. For whatever reason.
Jeez. It's always worse. Not to minimize your shame, not shame, but your
Right.
like pain through this. But there was always extra steps for them, the
There
women in this.
always was.
I mean, how did it that stuff, that those feelings just don't go away of having to publically apologize for something like this.
It
I
happened all
mean,
the
that
time to
had
people I knew. Oh, yeah. Oh, that's all
It
I was gonna
had
say. Go
to
ahead.
have, what did that do? It had to do something with your views on like, oh, kissing and sex and all of that. I mean, did it, I mean,
Well, so here's so the last part of that is I already mentioned this from the beginning. By default, our church structure with guys and girls was so rigid, right? And that
yeah.
separation was already so prevalent. When this happened, it was just the catalyst that allowed it to be accentuated because it was
Yeah.
already like that undertone wise, but now there was an overt situation that gave everyone the justification to be like, okay, we cannot intermingle, we cannot be with these people. And everyone in these grades here, my friends took sides, right? Guys took guys' sides and girls took girls' sides because I think intrinsically for those years, we were just taught that you couldn't trust the opposite gender. So when something like this
Wow.
happens and the lines were so undefined, right? They were never told really, at least as a group, what really happened between us. So it's all these question marks in your head. So as a guy, you go, okay, I gotta stick my guys and back them up. And as a girl, you gotta go, okay, I gotta stick my girls because we can't trust those guys and they're leading us astray, and vice versa. So this huge schism happened, which lasted through high school with my grade and with some other grades too, of all the guys and girls. And because the only thing in my mind that had happened that was wrong was me kissing this girl's on the cheek. And her too, was we just assumed, oh, this is all our fault. We did this, which caused all this to happen. So all these barriers and distance now and rigidity and just all this stuff is all because of us. And we felt that for years and years and years and years and years and years.
Wow.
And that even when you unlearn that mentally, I've unlearned that. I know it's not my fault, clearly, but there's still effects of that in just how I am as myself, I'm sure, that I don't even realize unconsciously, because that's how you view it all. But yeah, so
That's
dating, sex, kissing, that is such a big for me and some of my closest friends in that system. I'm 25 now and I haven't dated anybody. And there's another situation later on in my story of a 4 year long experience with a girl that made this probably the biggest lasting effects. But there's so much mental and emotional obstacles to have to process and work through because you've been taught that every normal advance in a relationship like that is a cross line.
Yeah.
So all these normal steps that you're supposed to take as a normal human being to pursue a relationship with a girl were always looked at as, oh, that's one step across the line, that's two steps across the line. The line's back there now. I'm still going. So I'm far over here. And it's not secure, it's not safe, it's not right. And so we never did growing up in high school. We never did because it wasn't worth it to feel like that and to be dealt with as if we had crossed all these lines that our church had set for us. So we never did. We never got the experience. And now we're in our 20s. And most of us, a lot of us, haven't been able to fully overcome that. We've made advances for sure, but it's still in our heads of all that stuff, all that red tape. constantly.
So much red tape,
Yeah.
so much damage. I mean, I felt it too.
Yeah.
You know, my first girlfriend was in my early 20s. You
Okay.
know, I did
Yeah.
date someone when we were in the church, but this was way after the
Yeah.
letter and how some shit. It's a long story short. It wasn't as structured as it was back in the early 2000s. So there definitely was some ease to it,
Yeah.
but there was still this pressure, like you're saying, all this red tape, all these lines that you can't cross. And then
Yeah.
once you cross that line, which I did a little bit, everything falls apart. And then you carry the weight of what you did because it's all your fault. And it's not fair for us. I think the biggest complaint I had is that we were never taught about this other than just don't do it until you're married. There was no healthy
Right.
conversation about integrating these desires, this stuff that's inside us, that's natural, it's biological. It's something to be contained.
Yeah.
That's it. And
Something
then
to
if you
be wary of, to avert be have an aversion to, because it leads to all this wrong stuff.
God, man, jeez. I'm sorry you had to carry that for so long.
Yeah. And the funny thing is, I after having a podcast and having so many conversations with people like you are, I realized, man, mine was mild, which doesn't undermine mine, because I realize the depth of mine. I've been able to come to terms with that, but also the extent that people have gone through things to say that that's mild is crazy. And it's
Yeah.
true.
I think our pain is our pain and we have to own it. You have to
Yeah,
own what you
absolutely.
went through. But then there's also the healthy realization that geez, did people go
Yeah.
through more than we did. You know, I mean, I'm feeling bad because my first kiss was at a Bible talk meeting and nobody cared, but we were also 9 versus
Yeah.
like 12. So
I
there was
didn't count.
probably one.
Yeah.
Never
That's
counted.
funny.
Man, so you didn't date at all in the
No,
church.
I have. You want me to go into my other experience I was talking about? I can do a
Sure, why
SparkNote
not?
version of
We've
it.
opened the
Okay.
door.
Okay, we're on this topic. So, and I'm going to do very SparkNotes because this is a 4-year long thing here. I was 16, homeschooled now. Pastor's kid was the girl who was also my homeschool group, who I started having feelings for, and it was mutual. And once again, we're church kids, we're kingdom kids, we're pastor kids, whatever. We want to do this in the most godly way possible. That's where our hearts are in this. So I go, okay, what is the most godly thing I can do? And the two things I did was I got advice from 12 different people in our leaders in ministry who I respected, which is far too many people.
Wait,
And
you said
then,
get
yeah.
advice from 12 people? Oh,
I
sorry, you
just
say
asked 12
advice,
people. Yeah.
it triggers me when you
Oh
that word
yeah.
advice
Oh
triggers
yeah.
me
No,
so hard.
I learned that through this experience of
Yeah.
what advice really was in this system. And a lot of them I bet they gave me good advice. I remember what it was. But the problem is the standard was, if I tell you this, you're gonna follow it. And when you get 12 different people's advice on something like dating where there is no biblical foundation for it, they're all gonna have, despite claiming they have the as a church, they have the right answer for this, they'll all give you 12 different ways to go about it, regardless.
Yep.
And I can only choose one way to go. So that means there's 11 people that are mad at me because I didn't follow their advice, which is kind of what happened. But so I did that. And I also, the first week I knew it was a mutual feeling, this girl and I asked the head pastor of our church to go to lunch or to lunch to get some advice, but just to, I don't talk about it, whatever. I went to brunch and leaving that, the through line was, okay, I love that you're taking a step to be a godly leader in this, a man leading her in this relationship. This wasn't a relationship, just a feelings with her. To do this in the godly way, you should both, you've been texting a lot the last couple of weeks, which we had. You should just stop talking completely, no texting, no talking, just to make sure you realign yourself with God and make sure he's still first. And we're like, oh, we weren't together in this talk, but I told her after what he told me. And we were like, oh yeah, we should do that. Cause that we've obviously made God less than first, because we're talking so much about all godly things. We're not crossing any lines because we've been terrified of our minds to do that. So we didn't talk for 2 weeks, no texting. And then the spark notes here is I went back after 2 weeks and asked, okay, cool, what's the next step? Because that was step one in the steps to a successful relationship or whatever.
Yeah.
You know what? Maybe just go a couple more weeks. Okay, cool. Go a couple more weeks. I had to tell this girl, I had to text her and be like, hey, because I was allowed to text her to tell her this. I had to say, hey, so we can't talk for a couple more weeks. And it was always that, oh, why not? Oh, I don't know. It's probably me or you. It's on one of us, because it's not leader's fault. So something's not right yet. We're not quite there yet. God's not, we're off directionally, I guess. 2 more weeks went. This happened time and time again. And every time there was a different excuse, justification. Sometimes it was I wasn't ready. Sometimes it was she was going through stuff, wasn't ready for this. Ready for what? Not dating, just talking. This went on for 2 years, where we couldn't
Jeez.
text. And the thing is too, because of all this rigidity with the guys and girls, very quickly in these 2 years, very early on, within a month probably, most of the church, the ones who cared, and almost all of our ministry, the youth ministry, knew that me and this girl were navigating this thing. So
Yeah.
everyone knew, and we were the hot button people now, because everyone was looking to us, our age, to see what would happen to us in the system, if it would go well or not. So that pressure alone was insurmountable for us, trying to be the role models and show this could be done successfully when it wasn't being done successfully already. But we weren't allowed to text, so our only time to talk would be in person, right? At home school or at church. The problem was, and we learned this from like constant confrontations, there were so many eyes on us from leaders and peers that we couldn't get over that pressure from everyone around us. So we wouldn't even talk in person. And when we did, it'd be very quick interactions that were really angsty and like trying to say something to each other. And then we get broken up by somebody or called over by somebody, or we just felt too much pressure so it
Jeez.
wouldn't happen. And it got to a point where we ended up like I commented on one of her photos on Instagram, and then she replied to my comment. And then before we knew it, we were having conversations in the comment section of Instagram posts and Facebook posts. Like that's how we were talking, because it wasn't secret. It was out in the public. Like we didn't feel like it was deceptive, but yet we still felt bad, like we were crossing some red tape. This all goes on for years. Go to college. I had to watch her get close with all the other guys in our ministry because they didn't have feelings for each other. But because we did, we weren't allowed to talk. And she is actually married to one of those guys now. Because that's what happens. And there was just so much shame, and ended up just falling apart, because even after we were allowed to talk again, there was so much fear and insecurity and no trust in ourselves. That's the SparkNotes version of that. But it's wild.
And it's interesting because I think it's safe to say you probably had trust for yourself before the first conversation. And all these leaders did, and all of this is just sort of taught you to not trust yourself, which is so counterintuitive, right? And it's crazy because the one person you wanted to get close to is the person you weren't allowed to, but you could get close with anybody else, you know. And that's how it was for a lot of people dating, you know, so much advice, so many rules, you know. There was so many documents you had to sign and triplicate, get them notarized before you were able to take the next step, you know. And it just made it almost like it's for me, it made it not worth it. It made me do the opposite where I had a secret relationship.
That happened all the time
Yeah,
in our ministry.
I just remember this girl liked me and she gave me attention. And girls at church didn't give me attention. And it wasn't because of anything more than it was like, it just felt like they couldn't. Because any kind of attention would mean it could lead you on. And then, you know, oh God,
A slippery
before you
slope.
know it, yep, it's a slippery slope. You know, a kiss on the cheek leads to, you know what? And so she gave me attention and it was just easy, you know. But then I felt like such a bad person for having something that was just natural, you know?
Right. And having to keep it hidden and feel like you had to if you wanted it to succeed, right?
And so I think the thing though is did you learn to value yourself though in this?
In this, absolutely
Like,
not.
I know,
Like,
see?
yeah. Oh, yeah. No, before I had that detritus, like emotionally from that 12-year-old experience.
Yeah.
But I mean, it could have gone such a different way because I still have a, I'm a very confident person. I have a good view of myself. Generally, but in this situation, I did, and then all of a sudden, it just got shot down. It wasn't even all encompassing. It was just in the area of relationships and guy girl stuff, right? In other areas, I was a leader. I was all this stuff. I knew my way. I was being touted as a role model in my ministry and at school, all this kind of stuff. But with this, I felt like a complete failure because my first thing at 12 ended in shambles. And now this, all the preventative measures were being taken as if I was a criminal. And so they wanted to make sure nothing bad happened if I was given access to it to happen, right?
Yeah.
But like there was to the device, there was a moment of that was so much levity for a second that turned up being so bad was a certain amount of time into this process in the first year. A couple months after we were not allowed to text, right? So we're still doing that, but it's been months and months and months. Both of our parents, which I think is so important, were up to date on everything. Like I was open with them, she was open with hers, and they were all for our relationship. I say relationship as if it was dating, but they were all for us pursuing a friendship, even, right, with this. But it just went against the church, and that authority was in constant contention because my parents, they are people who will stand up if they have differing views. But the problem is, in this system, they weren't fully aware enough at that point to notice how bad it was to be able to not allow themselves to be superseded by teen leaders and church leaders. So I had asked my parents at a certain time, and she'd asked her parents if it was okay, you think, to go on an encouragement date with each other, which is just mind blowing, right? Like an encouragement date with
Oh
two other people,
yeah.
that's insane, right? And we went on an, and they all, both our parents said, absolutely, do it. Amazing. Because they trusted us. They knew who we were. They trusted us, which mattered to us. We went on an encouragement date. But the thing is, right, those people I'd gotten advice from months before, a lot of them, or some of them, despite me not asking for it, kept being involved now. Because I had allowed them to come on board the first time with that first advice. So they kind of injected themselves now going forward. And one of those leaders said, I don't think it's a good idea to go on a date with her, an encouragement date. But my parents said it was okay and hers did. So we did. And then afterwards, I heard from two of my closest friends in the ministry that their mom had advised them not to hang out with me anymore because the team leader had told her that I had crossed boundaries and gone against her advice. And that became a
Jeez.
whole thing with this leader telling people that we had crossed boundaries, wasn't taking advice, and it just added that many more things against me in my pursuit of just trying to be allowed to do this. Because now it was, oh, he crossed boundaries, so now it's a negative on his record.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But yeah, stuff like that is just absolutely insane.
Yeah, and I think there is a purpose in like there's a I have a point because I wanted to go back to the value aspect because there's a
Yeah.
purpose in like teaching kids to value themselves, right? Value yourself in a relationship, value yourself. Don't just be, giving it all away. I find value, yeah. And there's
Yeah.
value in taking things slow. There's value in building friendships and all of that stuff and building the relationship. But it never taught us that. It just all became rules and
Yeah.
control. And oh, it sucks. And it's such a thing for us that if like you went a past or went against what a leader would say, they would go around and make sure that you were like essentially blackballed, you
Right.
know?
That authority dynamic is so huge with, especially in it being a kid in this stuff, is seeing the authority of leaders versus the authority of parents, which authority of parents should always be before authority leaders. And any, that sounds crazy to even have to say. But in this situation, I remember around the same time with this, going to my parents, and there was something else. Maybe it was that advice, maybe it was something else, like telling them about just the problems I was starting to have with the way this is being navigated with me and this girl. And I got a text from one of my team leaders just asking, it said in the text, it said, "Why are you talking to your parents about this stuff? Why are you sharing with them about this?" As if that was like, this is between us. You can't, why are you letting them in on what's going on here? And that was one of the biggest times, the first things my parents were like, okay, this is not good. But just wild that was even a system where that was viewed as an okay question. Like, why are you telling your parents about the stuff going on? Are you
kidding
me?
My parents and I love them and trust them.
Right. Who are you to assume that your authority trumps anything they have to say about it? It's just so twisted and warped.
Yeah. It sounds like, though, that you had a really great relationship with your parents.
I did and still do. They left a month after I left. They were along the ride for me. So as things were happening with me, they were kind of being exposed to the same stuff. So when I left, they were out soon after.
Yeah. So you're still trying, though. It sounds like you're trying to do what's right. You're trying to be the good disciple. So, you know, how long did you, so did you graduate as a disciple? Like graduate, did you get into college and disciple?
Despite all this stuff, right? It's such a huge mountain to get over to realizing that the things, even when the things that are, you don't agree with, that they're not right. So I knew I was having a problem with this stuff, but I didn't quite realize, and one bit at a time realized, okay, I don't agree with that. It's not right. That's not healthy. That's not healthy. But at the same time, it was a slow process. So I graduated a disciple. Yeah. I went to the campus ministry at UCLA for 2 years. And that was, my stuff at home wasn't resolved while this happened. So that was happening at home still. And that campus ministry had its own batch of problems. It was so legalistic, so many rules. Yeah. Every lesson ended with, and there were some, you know, really nice, good-hearted people for the most part. Every lesson ended with, okay, you got to tithe more. We're running low on tithe. And we're like broke college students. Yeah. Or it ended with, okay, you guys got to evangelize more. You got to get more people in here, because it was a dwindling campus ministry. The UCLA ministry, from my dad's recollection of it, like back then, it was like huge, and it was very small when I was there all these years later. And I just, so rigid. My second year, I was in a household with three other disciples from different ministries. And one of them was like the one who had the character of like, oh, he's gonna be the favorite of the pastor because he's getting stuff done. He's bought in, which I was still bought in, but by that point I was less, because I was starting to be like, okay, I'm becoming wary of all this stuff. I'm feeling a little stuck. But he was in it so much that he became the guy lording over everybody else in our household. When I got to a place the second year where I didn't show up to my first midweek ever, didn't show up on a Wednesday night, I got a call from him from the midweek saying, "Hey, where are you, man?" Not as if, not in like a, "Oh, I care about where you are. What's going on? Are you okay?" But like a, "You should be here and you're not. Where are you?" And I said, "I'm at home." He said, "Why did you come?" I said, "You know, I didn't have a huge reason. I just wanted someone to read. I wasn't feeling it. That's all." And that's completely justified and valid. But he was like, "Okay, fine. Bye." Hung up the next day, or the next 2 days. He barges into my room in the apartment, opens the door, not even knocking, barges in and says, "Hey, just to let you know, I talk with the lead pastor of our church, and he has told me I'm now your discipler. So I just want to let you know." Bye. Walks out.
Jeez.
Because they needed someone to put a rein on me, and they went, "Okay, you're liked in this ministry, so you be his discipler." And that was it from then on. They're like, "Oh, he was my discipler now, because he needed to keep me in check because I missed one midweek."
Oh man, you can't miss a midweek.
No,
I missed a midweek to go to a Dave Matthews Band concert and had 4 phone calls during the concert.
Nice, the absolute best reason.
It's interesting because people who like to toe the line or look like work the system, you get power.
Yeah.
Like that's something that I think I haven't talked much about, and it's just interesting that you brought it up because there was power in the system, and you could rise up and be this leader, even if it's just leading a household, or leading a Bible talk. There were a lot of people that wanted that and needed that. And oh man, would they lord that stuff over you? Oh,
It can happen
jeez.
so fast too, that rise to power. If you're the right person in the right place with the right mindset, you'll be in that so fast because they have a sensor for that, and they'll go, "Oh, we need you. You're perfect."
Yep. We're gonna grab that guy. That guy is sharp.
Right, exactly. He has potential, leadership potential. Yeah.
Yep. So what was the final straw?
At home, so much more goes into it, of course, as always. At home, that me and this girl had finally been allowed to talk again, but it was so ingrained in us, all the stuff we had been learned about ourselves and about how it works, that we had no foundation to healthily go forward. So that kind of just more or less kind of just crumbled and was done with. And by that point, I'd realized so much about like how wrong that was directed for us. So that happened at home, and at church, I had so many problems with that discipling thing and my roommates. There was a because I think what happens a lot of the time, people, is before they try to leave a place like this, they first try to see if they can invoke some change, if they care about it, if they really want to stay. Like I didn't want to leave. This is my place. I saw myself in my entire life raising my kids here. I don't want to leave. My first thought is, okay, there's problems here. My mom's mindset too was, we should probably try to help bring about change. They probably don't know about these things that are going on. So I asked if I could lead one of the midweeks, just one of the midweeks just for our UCLA group, like 8 people on a Tuesday on campus. I kind of lead one of those. And my roommate, my disciple, said, oh, sure. Okay, great. And I used it to just tell them at least as much as I knew then about, man, it's not about what we need to do for God. It's that we need to be with God. God doesn't want us to earn this stuff. He wants this. Because I knew that much by that point, because my parents really knew that stuff, which really helped me because at home I was learning different stuff than I was at church, which helped me so much gain a perspective and see when it wasn't lining up. I was like, dude, a life with God can be so much more free than we're living. And I felt so good about it. And it registered with people in our group. They loved it. After the midweek, my roommate disciple, who's the same age as me, by the way. We were both 18, 19. He says, hey, can I talk to you for a minute? I say, sure. He said, yeah, he said two things. He said, one, don't talk about, I talked about the Holy Spirit and some stuff. He said, don't mention that stuff because it really goes over people's head. They don't quite understand it. Because I was talking about freedom. And he said, that kind of goes over their heads. He said, two, bro, you used way too many scriptures. I would cut it back on the scriptures. And I used four scriptures. And he said, those are too many scriptures. And that was it. Those were his two notes for me. And I said, okay, great. Called my parents. I had a bunch of feelings about it. I talked to this disciple. I asked if we could talk the next day. And I said, I really don't agree with what you said. And then the through line of that was he basically told me, you're wrong. And be careful, bro. You don't want to lose your treasure in heaven. It was
Oh,
very
God.
vague threat. That was, what could that mean? Anything. And I said, what does that mean? And he just kind of left it as, careful, you're treading on some thin ice here because I'm your discipler now, kind of thing. So the attempt to keep me in check did the opposite. I didn't go back to another thing, and I kind of stopped going to campus ministry. Then during a break, I went back to my home church because I'm still in LA. So I went back to my home church. And because I hadn't been back in a little while, and the time I was away, I was learning so much and seeing so many more things. The feeling I had going back felt so different than the last time I was there because of my own perception of it all. I felt like an outsider. I felt like I didn't belong here. I had an anxiety attack in the bathroom twice where my hands were shaking. I had to go lock myself in the bathroom. I couldn't leave because I just didn't want to leave and go back into the group. People who were my family for years, I couldn't do it. And there was a lot going on in my church. My parents helping, like they sent out some anonymous surveys or surveys to our church, asking people's input about what was being done wrong in the church, and especially with the youth minister and the youth, the younger people. Got so many responses for this, all anonymous, because people were too afraid by that point. They've learned if you're not anonymous, you're going to get hunted down and mellowed out, right? And one of the head leaders' wives went to my mom and demanded her that she give up the names of the people who submitted responses. And my mom said, heck no, I promised it was anonymous and it was anonymous. I'm not giving you the names. She was so mad. Once again, another thing just outlined the control they wanted to have over this. They wanted to know the people who spoke out and wanted to, I don't know, talk to them, quote unquote. But all that to say, all this happened. And there was a certain point where I stopped going. So I wasn't in the campus ministry anymore. I stopped going to that. And because I was not at my home church because I was at college, I just never went back. So that was it.
Mm-hmm.
A slow decline, but also a fast one at the same time. Once it got to the wire there, a lot happened at once.
Yeah. I can't stop thinking about him saying, careful, you're going to lose your treasure in heaven.
Like, what does that even... I still, to this day, don't know exactly what he meant. I don't even know if he knew what he meant.
I mean, yeah. I mean, it's what's the scripture? Don't store for yourself treasures on earth where moth and rust can destroy. Store treasure in heaven. Yeah, I mean, he's just... And what he's essentially saying is, don't disagree with me because we'll kick you out. You know, right. It's almost like he felt that he was holding, you know, your place, and he had the say over it.
Right. There will be consequences for contesting with this authority.
Yeah, you don't question even your disciple. Jeez. It sounds like he just didn't get what you were saying.
Yeah,
and the Devo or whatever.
It must have been. We weren't speaking the same language, clearly.
It sounds like he's like, I don't understand the Holy Spirit. Oh, four scriptures. Oh, that's so much. Oh,
I know. Gosh,
we just need one anyway.
He was like, keep it at two. That's what he said. He said, keep it at two scriptures. I said, okay. God, I didn't know there was a formula to this, but there is.
So you quit going. What was it like? Monster.
It was so weird. Because, like I mentioned, in my mind, I was going to be there to the day I died. And all my friends were.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to have kids there. I was going to find a girl there, get married there, have kids there, and be so happy there. Until all of a sudden, it was like, wait, that's not an image I want or that looks realistic anymore. And it's like, wait a minute. And this is all just practical church stuff, let alone the belief side of it, which is a whole different conversation of, I've been taught all these things that because I was a kid in it, took at face value because they're being told to me by adults, by leaders who I've just been told I can trust. So I do, because I haven't learned that they're not trustworthy. So they tell me this and they're a leader for a reason. So they must be right about this. So I'll believe that about this. I believe that about this, this way scripture is interpreted with this belief about guys and girls or about sin or whatever. That makes sense to me until all of a sudden I leave. And I see one crack, and then it becomes more and more cracks. And I realize, man, so much of the way I lived and what I believed was just toxic and damaging.
Yeah.
And, but yet, there's a couple things I think are still true and are still healthy. Because, of course, there always are. There's so many things to all talk to us about. There's a couple things that I would agree with still. But which ones are right and healthy? Which ones are not and damaging? Which ones are ruining my life? Which ones are helping me? And it throws it all up into, that's my metaphor, is a jumble of crumpled papers, all these crumpled papers. And it takes forever. And it's so exhausting because I don't know what I believe. I don't know who God is. I don't know what church is. I don't know what my faith is. I don't know who I am, really. So I have to kind of start at zero in a system where I thought I had the correct beliefs from the very beginning and would never have to look at that again. And all of a sudden, I have no idea if I even believe if God exists or if church is a thing or about this, that are things that I thought, man, every person I saw questioning those things back then was just weak in their faith and they ended up falling away.
Yeah.
And now I'm like, well, here I am. But it was so hard. And the social stuff, right? Questioning these friends who I thought would be lifelong friends and questioning whether they were contextual friendships that were just because they were in this church together or if they were real, that would live on even when I'm not in that church anymore. And many of them also ended up leaving in the next couple of years. So they're out too. And a lot of those are still around, my close friendships. A lot of them ended. A lot of the ones that weren't as close just aren't there anymore.
Yeah.
But so tough to answer your question. It's so tough for so many reasons.
Yeah, I think for me, it felt like I was floating in a sea. Like I had my, like, I just kind of jumped off the ship and I was just floating where I could go any direction, anywhere I wanted. And it is tough because you don't, you know, you are starting from zero in a lot of ways. You're starting, you know, I can remember feeling like, I don't know, I got kind of lucky because I met my now wife a month after I left.
Wow, the timing of that.
Yeah, I know. And so it kind of helped. And you know, I
Yeah.
my exit was so slow and so long that it wasn't so abrupt, and I was able to kind of like create some friendships and stuff. But I think you just
Yeah.
realize, I mean, we had you have so much time after you leave the church
Oh
and
my
you don't know
gosh.
what to do with it, you know? Right?
You can have a life. And the thing is too, you mentioned that I wanted to mention that, like you mentioned that jumping off a ship. And that's a
Yeah.
great visual because a big such a big difference once you realize once you're out is when you're in it, every single thing you do was in support of one specific direction,
Yeah.
one specific general goal. One everything you do is in one direction. Everything you're trying to
Yeah.
do is in one direction, right? And all of a sudden you don't have a direction. And it's like, wait, everything I was, everything I believed, everything I did day to day was in pursuit of getting closer that way. And now I don't even know if I want to go that way. So what do I do? What do I want to do? What do I need to be doing? I have no idea.
Did you feel like in the back of your mind that something was pulling to you spiritually, even though you left the church?
Yeah, and I think a big, once again, I credit that a lot to my parents because they, right, while they were in the system, they were still in the system and they were bought in while they were bought in. So they didn't differentiate on a lot of beliefs that the ICOC did. They still agree with a lot of what they did. But as time went on and they started disagreeing, they didn't let themselves just get molded back in. They allowed themselves to stand on whatever they agreed, like whatever they believed. And so I was able to be fed a lot of what I think is healthy beliefs about faith and God and
Yeah.
that structure. So once church didn't work out, the ICOC didn't work out, I knew at least that, okay, they're offering me something here which I register with, which has since grown and helped me reestablish a lot of things. But that was kind of a life raft, right? And that boat metaphor, that was a life raft of something I can hold on to. I'm still in the water here,
Yeah.
but there's something for me to float on to think it through a little bit without sinking, which was nice.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely when I finally left, I wanted nothing to do with church or anything, but I always felt a pull to something. I mean, and I would go other places like
Yeah.
Eckhart Tolle books and just different things. I just couldn't any the word Christian just would tense me up, you know, and like freak me out. I just couldn't handle it, but there's always this feeling of there's something happening behind the scenes that I want to understand, and
Yeah.
that never went away.
Like there's something bigger going on. I can feel it. We made it so narrow and we put a box around it. But whatever's out there beyond our box still exists. And I totally agree with you. And I was so averse to church too. I still am. I am working through some, there's so much cynicism, right? That's just natural. And you don't trust people, you don't trust the churches. Because the thing is too, what doesn't help is that it feels every day I'm getting proven right in all these churches. Constantly over and over again, I'm like, oh, that's a good church. Oh, wait, never mind. Oh, that looks good. Oh, never mind. They did something there. And I'm in a place where I'm looking for that. I'm seeking it out so I see it easier too, because my cynicism, but it's not invalid, which makes it hard. But I'm still very much, for a while I was averse to church, and now I'm just very hesitant. And I'm not plugging, I'm not going to a church until I get to a place that I see myself getting to at some point, but not yet. A place where I can be there because I want to be there fully, not because I feel like I have to or I'm afraid of not being there, because that can't be it.
It's challenging. I'm still, I'm still there too. It's hard. It's hard to be in church. And so for me, like my little bit more of my story, like I left church and then I got a job at a coffee shop that marketed to churches. So
Oh,
I got,
great.
so like I got plugged into contempt, like, so in your book, it's interesting. You talk a lot about contemporary Christianity. You call it the CCC. And so for me, I never thought that we were contemporary Christianity. I thought we were something totally different. I mean, we were right, whatever. But then I got plugged into all of that outside, and it was crazy. And I think it just fueled my fire. I mean, I was going to mega churches in Atlanta and setting up their coffee stuff and listening to all these pastors. I was going to concerts and setting up stuff and seeing how Jesus and God is sold, and
Marketed, yeah, for
man,
sure.
does it, man, does it break your heart and like just reinforce that it's all a lie for me. And then so it's still trying. Oh, it's like I'm healing from two things, two big things in my life. But it's just, I think that though, I don't know, I just have this feeling now that like it's not like, I would love to have a group of people around me that believe that I could have like discourse and discussions and talk and a community. But I don't know if I necessarily also need it at the same time. Like we can still wrestle with these questions and these thoughts and this, we can explore what this is without feeling the need to be a part of something to validate us, I guess.
I feel like
That's what I said.
sometimes what can happen is, and this isn't, there's many times this doesn't happen, but what I've seen when it errs on the dangerous side is, once you establish and label yourselves as a group that does this, or that believes certain things, you unintentionally oftentimes get tied down to all the things you believe, and it becomes a thing you need to protect rather than, there becomes stakes and things to lose in that. So you have a tendency to respond to disagreement by protecting your beliefs and the strongholds, rather than allowing yourself just to have an evolving faith and beliefs that can one day have this, but one day realize, oh, that's a good point. I'm going to change my view on that certain idea because I agree with that. Because there's nothing to lose in that, only something to gain, really. You know what I mean?
And we love the thing more than, how do I said this before, like we love the thing more than the people. It's like we have to have the thing. The thing is what matters. Even though the thing is killing us, we still have to keep that thing because we don't have anything else if we don't have the thing. And that's what was sold. I mean, that's
We'll,
what I felt.
yeah, I was gonna say, and we say this thing is God, right? They'll say, oh, this thing is God, but we realize, no. We've made an entire structure here that we have said is God, but God's over here. And we've made it where, as a church, if you're doing these things in this church, following these rules, believing these things, you have a relationship with God. But what you realize, especially growing up, is I've done all these things. So when everyone asks me how my relationship with God is, I'll say, oh, it's great. I'm doing all these things, believe these things, doing these, whatever. And I realize, man, I've never actually just like, oh, he's over there. And I really don't know who that is. Because I've done all these things that I've been put in as an easy buffer. It's like, Roy, you and me are friends, right? Oh, we're best friends. Oh, why? Oh, because I have read Roy's book and I do all the things that Roy likes to do. I know his favorite ice cream. I go to his favorite shops. I know his favorite movie. We're best friends. Have you talked to him? Oh, once on the podcast, but we're best friends. It's like, well, okay, sure. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. I you brought up this thing, and it kind of was something I was going to talk about in your book because it was very powerful to me. It's in the very beginning, and you talk about the fruit. It's like you give someone who never tried a lemon and told them it was a strawberry. That
Yeah.
whole thing, and then they think they grow up thinking that a strawberry is sour and all unpleasant and all that stuff. And then it says, and then when also I'm trying to read it. Let's say only once is it revealed to them that the sour fruit was in fact not a strawberry, would they ever know that what they believed wasn't true. In their minds, based on what they were taught through their firsthand experience, they did not like strawberries. Only now do they realize they were dealing with a completely different fruit altogether. How long can a person go without realizing a strawberry isn't a lemon? And for me, why that was so powerful is because we were told God was this,
Right.
right? This is
Yep.
what God is. This is what church is. This is what religion is. And it's this works, earn base, sour thing. And for me, what has had, that had helped me was when I realized that's not God. That's someone's idea of God.
Yeah.
And they just taught us that, you know, and it sucks that you spend your whole life thinking that something is this and the damage that it caused us, you know. But the beauty of it,
We,
when you realize, no, that's
yeah.
not it. It can be something else.
Absolutely. I know so much of our of the ICOC especially is built on the evangelism aspect, right? Bringing
Yeah.
people in, convicting them, and making sure they know how worse off they are without what we have to offer them, which we say is
Yeah.
God. And we'll go, oh, he'll change your life. And he'll give you the freedom and the love and the whatever everything you've ever wanted. But they come in and we oftentimes show them that at first. We love bomb, we give all this stuff. Then we say, okay, here's God. Here's the things we believe that is God. Here's the things we do that is God. All this stuff, and it'll change your life. But
Yeah.
it's so devoid of those elements of love, of freedom, of grace, that we find ourselves just strung out, wrung out, right? And still constantly being told, man, this is God. If you're not feeling those things, it's on you. If you're, this is God and he's everything. See, the scripture says so. If you're not getting that from him, if you and God aren't, if this isn't enough for you, then either God's not enough for you or it's in your heart. And I can tell you God's enough for you. So it must be on you. So we have people in these churches that are still there who are just trying to make it work and they don't feel it, but they're trying to justify to themselves that, oh no, it's just me. Everything I need is still here, but I'm not feeling it, so it's on me. So they work harder. And they're there for 20
Yeah.
years trying to just work it out and trying to figure it out, trying to make it work. When it's not enough for them, because it was never meant to be enough for them. It's not.
Nope.
It's so much less than enough for them.
Yeah. Yeah. So what's your view of God now? Told you we'd get to
Oh,
it.
dude, so all over the place, but I'll tell you this, he's so much bigger than he
Yeah.
ever was growing up. So much bigger, so much more powerful, which allows me even more freedom to dive deeper without the fear of having the wrong answers, right? The more powerful God is, the more terrain you have to explore without feeling like you're stepping over a line you're not supposed to step over, right? There's so much red tape growing up, so many lines, not just in, guy girl stuff or in beliefs, but in all your doctrine, all your sin management, everything you do, you're always just living out of trying to be aware of where the lines are and staying within your boundary. When you realize how big God is, like, oh man, I can explore this entire area. I can question all these things. And oftentimes they'll lead me to a better, more satisfying answer that I'm going to like a lot in terms of how I view the world and myself and God and faith and whatever. But we're so
That's
afraid
awesome.
because we're totally so powerful, but then say, oh, but step over this line, it's too much for him. He can't handle it. We don't say it in those words, but that's what we kind of tell people is God can't handle us going across these certain lines. But it's so much bigger. So God is so much bigger. Absolutely.
That's cool. And so what prompted you to write the book?
A mixture of things. One, me just needing to write it all down and express it. I sometimes share with people that the process of writing it was kind of like a big part of it and healing for me was having to finish sentences, meaning when I'm at the stage I was when I left the church, having all these ideas in my head and questions and doubts and all this stuff, hurt feelings, right? Pain. It was all these half sentences where it would be like, oh, I'm hurt. Oh, I feel this. Oh, blah, 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 blah. But then there was no because dot, dot, dot. I didn't have to think through why. But having to write a book that someone else is going to read who doesn't know your mindset, you have to finish every sentence to effectively express where you're at. So every sentence I would say, I was hurt by this because this, 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 this. And I would go, oh, that's why. I didn't quite realize that. I had never connected before my book the connection between the 12-year-old experience and the 16-year-old experience with the girls that really conflated together for me and feeling like I am such a failure when it comes to relationships and I have such bad boundaries. That was said to me by a team leader one time. So he told me that I have really bad boundaries with the girls because of this stuff. And I never realized that those things were compounding on each other. And so many things like that where I had to finish these sentences. So that was one thing. Another reason was I knew that I was not even close to the only person going through this stuff. So I wrote it for all the people who have gone through the same stuff. It was targeted towards, it was through the perspective of a younger person. So I've gotten a lot of responses from that. But also the thing is people who are older were at one time a younger person. So they all relate to it. I'm hearing from a bunch of people. So I really wrote it from my younger self too, as if, what would my 12-year-old self going through that need to hear? It's like, dude, this stuff here, please, you know?
That's cool. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's very healing to write it all down. It's
it is. Yeah.
It's wild once you start and use it. I was just writing about the things that we went through in this church is it's just bananas. And sometimes it does make me feel less crazy. Feeling that someone's writing and feeling the same thing I'm feeling about it, you know.
Yeah.
And then but talking
book does,
about
the,
this.
These podcasts do that too, you know.
Huh. Yeah. So it's good. So what do you think, man? We were in a cult?
This is the question, isn't it? And on my podcast, it's the question. And on my podcast too, I've gotten some, I don't know, I'm not going to call it flack, from different, certain, sometimes I get approached by certain people who are very far on one side of the cult's question, right? Going, hey, you're being very diplomatic. And the reason is I allow whoever guest is on, whatever their perspective is about it, I agree with them. I go, sure, that's exactly where you're at. And that's if they're, oh, it's absolutely a cult. I go, right on. If they go, not really. I go, okay, cool. I believe, I do believe it's a cult. And that has been a question. For a while it was, you know, cult-like tendencies. For a while it was like, oh, you know, it's like 60% a cult. And then the question was, after a while, I was like, okay, at what point, there's not an answer to this, I don't think, definitively, but how many cult-like characteristics must there be to be considered a cult? Is it five? Is it seven? Is it because I could probably say this with a lot of confidence, is there's probably a lot more cult-like characteristics than there are
where's,
that are not
yeah where's
cult-like.
The checklist so that we can get a definitive answer,
and there never can because it is very nuanced, but I definitely think it's cult.
It's funny that since you were going through that, I was thinking about how I used to call it the Diet Coke of cults.
Right.
Yeah.
And like, the thing is, the truth is there are definitely worse cults, but the thing is just because there's a worse version of it, does that not mean that we are not it also, right? Because there will always be. Take the three worst cults. One of those is worse than the other two. The other two are still cults.
There's different types of stabbing, but you're still going to suck. It's still going to suck if you get stabbed, you know, no matter where.
The wound is
that
still
was a
there.
Harsh, there's a harsh analogy, so I'm just...
I know, that's accurate, though, is it not?
Yeah, it is. It's pretty accurate.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, dude, thanks for sharing your story. Thanks for coming on.
Of course.
You know, part of this, I love it. I love that people are reaching out and people are wanting to be a part of this. For you guys wanting to check out Austin Knoll's book, it's a jumble of crumpled papers. You can probably get it anywhere, right?
Anywhere. Yep.
Yeah. And if you want to learn more, you can listen to his Crumbled Papers podcast. And is that on all the platforms as well?
That is. And I just want to say, these conversations I've learned from my podcast and listening to yours, are they're so they serve such a purpose, right? And I'm sure
Cool.
you felt that as a host. I felt going on like, man, it's so just sharing stories and helping people know that they're not crazy and not alone can
Yeah.
be everything for them. And it
It's
is.
yeah, it's a life or death thing for some people.
Yeah.
Just to know that there's someone else out there that feels like you feel is powerful. So you
Absolutely.
keep doing what
So
you're doing. I'm going to keep doing what I'm doing.
good. Thank you for having me on. I appreciate it. It was a great
Yeah,
conversation.
thanks. And thanks you guys for listening, all your support. Once again, if you are a member of the ICOC and would like to come share your story, you can come to you can sorry, message me at clemenswithaz@gmail.com or find my Instagram page, clemenswithaz@Instagram. You can direct message me. But yeah, thanks for all your support, guys. Until next time, peace.